Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's weekend program with me, Jan Richter. Coming up in today's show, in Czech Life, we look at romantic relationships between Czechs and foreigners. Then we talk to historian Jan Richlík about his new book on the history of Czechoslovakia and the reasons behind the country's failure.
The main problem of Czechoslovakia was very similar to that of Austria-Hungary. It failed because the people of this country didn't have the single identity.
And later, we bring back our popular miniseries from the archives, so please stay tuned for all of that. But now, in the past 20 years, Prague has attracted a number of foreign professionals, and many of them settle here permanently. With the Czech capital growing more international, relationships between locals and foreigners have also become more common. In this edition of Czech Life, Sara Borůvka speaks to some of those intercultural couples about their experiences and their everyday relationship life.
Černý, hello, Matovi.
A tak Matovi.
Bethany Adams and Tomáš Dokškal have been living together in Prague for nearly 4 years. Bethany is originally from Idaho, America, and Tomáš has grown up here in the Czech capital. The two are one of the city's many intercultural couples, which seem to have become much more common here in the past decade. At a recent visit to their apartment, I asked Tomáš and Bethany how they first met.
We met because I was working for his sister, actually. I found a job teaching drama and English, and his sister owned the school that was doing that. And then it's not really a very interesting story, but it ended up that she had a weekend like trip for her school, and he came and was kind of stranded there, and I came and I was kind of stranded there because my students weren't there, so we ended up spending the weekend hanging out together. So that's how we got to know each other.
At that point, Bethany had only lived in the Czech Republic for 8 months, and she moved in with Tomáš fairly quickly, just a few months after they got to know each other. For both of them, it was the first relationship with someone of a different nationality, even though Tomáš says that he had met foreigners in Prague before and found it very interesting to interact with them.
I was around foreigners in Prague when I was a teenager a lot. It was really cool and fancy for us, really interesting. And there was this hostel in Žižkov, and it was close to our school, a gymnasium, and we went there all the time. And there were these like foreigners, kind of like hipsters. It was this really like cool hostel, and we went there like after school and then even like instead of school and so, and it felt really cool to be kind of taken as one of those cool travelers.
Michaela Škrábová has a degree in psychology and is writing her dissertation on the topic of intercultural communication. I asked her if she agrees that factors like an increase in migration to the Czech Republic over the past 20 years have led to a growing number of relationships between locals and foreigners.
I was checking some data in the Czech Statistical Office, and since the year 1995 to 2000, there was maybe just 1% of intercultural marriage. But recently, the percentage of intercultural marriage is getting to 3 or 4%. And I think it's a very general number because we don't know how many intercultural couples are living together without getting married or how many couples are maybe getting married in some other country. So I think that according to time, when the borders are open, especially when we talk about Czech Republic, so in Prague, there are more and more international companies where usually many bosses or workers are foreigners. So I think that logically it will be the phenomena of the next years.
Of course, more and more Czechs also spend time studying or working abroad. Rosalie Kohoutková, a young director who is in the process of finishing her thesis film for Prague's famous FAMU Film Academy, met her French boyfriend Anthony when she was in Paris for an internship. Now he is moving to Prague to live with her. I asked Rosalia if she is worried about him feeling at home here and if there are any points in which she feels their two cultures really differ.
Already we had to face some little problems. For example, that the Czechs, they don't drink, and this is a big difference between the Czech people and the French people, that we don't really drink like this small French or Italian coffee in the morning, which is like so ordinary in France, that like you go on your way to work, you stop by in some cafe and you drink your little coffee in the morning, which doesn't really exist in Prague. So, and he needs it. He's dependent on it. So, for example, yes, I'm trying to like find him some bar which would be open so early in the morning and they would have a good coffee.
Michaela Škrábová, aside from focusing her research on intercultural psychology and communication, has also been in a romantic relationship with an Italian for the past 9 months. I asked her how the Czech and the Italian culture go together.
Czech people are not really a culture of dining or eating together. I think we, already from the communism era, we are used to eat just quickly something which will fill in the stomach, but we are not so much used to communicate and enjoy the process. So that's something what the Spanish and Southerners mind.
And so do you get to eat a lot of great Italian home-cooked food now?
Yes, I do. I'm very bad cook, honestly, and I enjoy all the advantages of having Italian cook at home.
Aside from eating and drinking habits, intercultural couples also face more difficult challenges, says Michaela Škrábová, especially when the relationship becomes a long-term one.
I think at the beginning, it's usually more positive. Because, especially for people who like new things, who like to get to know something exciting and new. But when you go deeper to the relationship where the communication is really important, so often the communication can become more problematic because you can never feel the small nuances, you never understand the humor fully, and you never probably can understand all the behavior of your partner.
Another factor for some couples can be the language barrier. I asked Bethany and Tomáš if they have ever felt that being from different cultures made it harder for them to get along, communicate, or resolve problems.
The language was an issue, and kind of she's shaking her head that not. Well, the language was an issue and kind of still is, but now it's, if you are talking about English, now it's just very little issue. It's more like that we get sometimes impatient with each other when we have to like repeat one sentence that is not important at all, something like, did you do the laundry or something like that, and you don't understand, and then you have to repeat it like three times, then you get impatient. But it's not a big issue because there would be things like this in any relationship.
The couple speaks English most of the time, but Bethany enjoys practicing her Czech with Tomáš's family, who she says are very patient with her. For Bethany, the language barrier is less of an issue than their different attitudes towards what is romantic.
It all seems really silly when I say it, but for some reason it matters when... when it's like you're living with it. I guess like that I think that Americans and Czech people have completely different idea of what is romantic and what, or like how to be romantic or how romantic you should be, how often. So I think that's a difference.
Yeah, I agree. Let's say only if you watch the movies and the translations, that in American movies there is I love you all the time, and Czech translation is Mám tě rád, I like you. So only from this you can see kind of the difference, that we are not so straightforward or like talking about our feelings all the time and kind of without any thinking about it, or that we keep our feelings more to ourselves.
Being exposed to a different culture can also have a sort of learning effect on people, says Rosalia Kohoutková. After spending a lot of time in Paris, she has incorporated some of the Parisian habits she enjoyed into her everyday life here in Prague.
For example, what I try to do now in Prague, in my hometown, is to like be nice with the people in the shop, that have some like small conversation with someone, with some like Chinese girl who sells the vegetable, for example, which is like so normal in Paris that you like wake up in the morning, you go to buy your bread and you're like, how are you? You ask some like little stupid things, but it really makes the conversation with the people and the being with the people nicer.
Despite factors that can be difficult, such as the language barrier or different lifestyles, the couples I spoke to seem to appreciate the cultural differences. And sometimes being aware of them also helps you to accept character traits of your partner that are quite opposite to your own, says Tomáš.
There is a good point about Bethany or so, or about maybe the intercultural relationship, is that we are aware of the differences, and Bethany knows that she talks more than I'm used to. And I was talking to a friend about that, and we were discussing how that is when our girlfriends talk too much and we are not that interested. And, and I told him, yeah, sometimes I just, you know, say, sorry, I wasn't listening to you, and she says, yeah, that's good, or that's you know, she doesn't get offended or so, because we are kind of aware of the difference. And he was completely perplexed by that, because he would never dare to say anything like that.
Bethany says that one thing she has learned from her relationship with Tomáš is that accepting the differences is much easier than trying to be someone who you're not.
I'm not Czech. I'm never going to be Czech. I'm American. And just accepting that and saying, like, it's not gonna change. I'm not going to become Czech. It's never going to happen. So, I mean, I might change. And like I said, my whole life has changed and I'm a different person, but I'm still an American. And I'm never going to be able to be like a Czech woman, even if I want to.
Sara Borůvka with that edition of Czech Life that was first broadcast in November 2011. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up next, Czechs and Slovaks spent most of the 20th century in one country, Czechoslovakia. Ever since its foundation, however, each nation had a different idea of how the country should work and what their role in it should be. In his new book, entitled Czechs and Slovaks in the 20th Century, Cooperation and Conflict, historian Jan Rychlík argues that Czechoslovakia was in fact bound to fail as a state and that communism only postponed its inevitable end. I sat down with Professor Rychlík and asked him how different the expectations of each nation were when Czechoslovakia emerged in 1918.
For the Czechs, the new state was in fact a resurrection of the medieval Bohemian state, which ceased to exist gradually in 17th and 18th century. In Czech thinking, simply, it was a revival of this state which extended to the east, up to Jasenice at Rutinia. But I would like to say that not only the Czechs, even the outside world, and mainly the English-speaking countries and France, looked upon Czechoslovakia as a resurrected Czech state. The Slovaks never saw it like that, because they had nothing common in the past with the Czech state. They were always part of the Hungarian kingdom. So the Slovaks, of course, it's a generalization, because there were different opinions. But generally speaking, the Slovaks, their vision of Czechoslovakia was rather something in the form of union of two semi-independent states, something like old Austria-Hungary was. That is also why they consistently wrote and still write Czechoslovakia with hyphen, or rather dash, and capital S. For the Czechs, of course, this vision was something they were not prepared for, and which was very difficult for them to stomach.
Was this asymmetry in the relation towards the common country, was this the key factor why Czechoslovakia eventually failed?
Well, I wouldn't put it like that. My opinion as a scientist, historian, ethnologist is that it's not possible simply for two or more conscious nations, I mean political nations, to live permanently in one country. Simply, we don't have in Europe such case. All states which are compound states of two or more nations are very unstable. And the main problem of Czechoslovakia was very similar to that of Austria-Hungary. It failed because the people of this country didn't have the single identity. They didn't consider to be Czechoslovaks. Even the Czechs didn't. They said, we are Czechoslovaks. In fact, they were not. They said Czechoslovaks, but they thought Czech, because Slovak influence was minimal, if any. So this is the main reason, like Austria-Hungary failed because there was no Austrian identity. Czechoslovakia failed because there was not enough strong Czechoslovak identity. Of course, what I said, the different expectations had some impact. But on the other hand, we must say that at the end of Czechoslovakia, this idea of Czechoslovakia as a loose federation materialized. But anyway, it proved to be too late. And of course, it would be a speculation, and we historians shouldn't ask a question whether it could have any different development if this idea appeared earlier.
Well, representatives of the Slovak nation from time to time repeated their demands for political and cultural autonomy within Czechoslovakia, but they seemed never to have been really answered by the Czechs. Do you think that Czechs understood the Slovak point of view?
Well, it depends about which period do we talk. Cultural autonomy, we can say Slovaks always had cultural autonomy, even in the First Republic. Their demand for political autonomy in the First Republic certainly was not understood. But later, after the Second World War, and mainly it was a main issue of the Slovak political program in the reform year of 1968, they did understand that it's necessary. There is another problem, according to me. We shouldn't think that if a conscious nation obtains autonomy, it will satisfy the nation. We don't have such example. Autonomy is just the first step for further demand. By the way, the Czechs vis-a-vis Vienna before 1914 adopted absolutely the same policy. So 99%, even autonomy in the First Republic wouldn't help if we look upon the problem in longer period. Because sooner or later, it would be too narrow, and the limits of Czechoslovakia simply would be too, I do not want to say harming, but maybe to see objecting the further Slovak development. By the way, after 1968, Slovakia had broad autonomy. Let's put aside that, of course, in the terms of and in the conditions of communist dictatorship, it was rather the fiction. But after 1989, their autonomy was very broad. It didn't help anyway.
So, in other words, you're saying that the communist rule only postponed the inevitable end of Czechoslovakia?
Well, it's my personal opinion, of course. I cannot prove it. That's an advantage of us historians, that unlike natural scientists, we can't make, you know, in laboratory simulations of these processes. But I am deeply convinced that, in fact, paradoxically enough, the Soviet occupation of Czechoslovakia and the forcible stop of the democratization process extended the life of Czechoslovakia. Well, but this is, again, the speculation we will never know.
Well, those who opposed the split of Czechoslovakia in the early 1990s often said that most Czechs on one side and Slovaks on the other did not want their own countries and wanted to continue living in one common state. Why did it happen then in the end?
I think this is another myth, because, yes, if you put it like this, that most Czechs and Slovaks were for the common state, then you're right, it was so. The catch is that what does it mean, the common state? It's a very broad term, And definitively and certainly, the Slovaks didn't mean by the common state federation in the form as it existed, or even centralized state as it existed in the interwar period. When you go to the details, and we have this public opinion poll, then you see that most of the Slovaks were talking about common states, but it would be so loose that it would have to fall apart anyway. I think that Barbara Kudenhove-Kalergi, Austrian journalist, which covered the Central Europe for Austrian television, made a point when she said on one occasion that the Czechs under common state understand Bundesstaat, it means a federal state, while the Slovaks understand under this term Bund der Staaten, it means a union of the states. In German, it's more precise than in English, but I think that the difference is visible. Such loose, very loose federation with practically no competences for the central authorities, or even confederation, which we cannot consider to be the common state, in fact, at least in the terms of international law, would be an advantage for the Slovaks, but would be of no use for the Czechs. And the coexistence of sooner and weaker partner, and stronger and weaker, or bigger and smaller, always is possible only if it suits the stronger one, not the weaker one. So, in fact, after the elections in 1992, it was the Czech side. It was Václav Klaus, the leader of the victorious party, Civic Democratic Party, which is still a ruling party here, said, either you will accept our terms or we must split. There is nothing between. No confederations or unions are of any use for the Czechs. Take it or leave it.
Now, when Czechs and Slovaks look at the history of Czechoslovakia 20 years after the country ceased to exist, do you see that their views are coming together, or do you see that they're more diverging and they look at the common history from very different point of views?
I can say honestly that the majority of Slovak historians, Slovak intellectuals and Slovak public life realize the positive impact which the existence of Czechoslovakia had. It's only marginal groups of extremely right-wing political subjects, which are now even not represented in the parliament, which denied it. So today, Slovak approach is roughly like this. The existence of Czechoslovakia was a big advantage for the Slovak nation. The Slovak nation could prepare for their final step, and of course the final step could be only independent Slovak state. On the Czech side, of course, we have the permanent continuity of the present Czech Republic with deceased Czechoslovakia. We consider the First Republic also the part of the same state. Also, for instance, as it's generally known, 28th of October, it means the beginning of Czechoslovakia. The state, which no more exists, is a public holiday here, which is not very common. So definitively, there is a different approach toward those 74 years of common state. But we cannot say that the Slovak approach toward it, or Slovak attitude rather, would be negative. Definitively not. They say, yes, it has its mistakes, but it did have positive significance for our development.
I was talking there to historian Jan Rychlík. We are always happy to get your comments and questions, so do get in touch. The address is Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2. You can also send us an email at english@radio.cz. Coming up next, a rerun of our popular miniseries From the Archives by David Vaughan.
On March the 2nd, 1978, for the first time, a person was launched into space who was neither a Soviet nor an American citizen. His name was Vladimír Remek, and he came from Czechoslovakia. Millions of Czechs and Slovaks had the chance to follow the event live, both on television and radio, and it was even celebrated in song.
Cestou snů, našich snů, dal se v lodi s hvězdou barvy červánků.
He embarked on the journey of our dreams beyond the ends of the world in a ship with a star as red as the morning sky. The ship with the red star was Soyuz 28, the third mission to dock with the Soviet space station, Salyut 6. The flight marked the beginning of the Intercosmos program, which aimed to give the Soviet Union's Eastern Bloc allies access to space. The launch took place at 15:28 Universal Time from a site in Kazakhstan. Czechoslovak radio's Ilya Jencha described the scene as the sky lit up and the rocket rose into the heavens. As the faces of the two cosmonauts on board, Vladimír Remek and his Russian commander Alexei Gubarev, appeared on the monitor in front of him, he waxed lyrical.
Připomínají dva bratry, Bacoví, spíše dvojčata ve svých skafandrech a ochranných přilbách.
They look like two brothers, or even twins, in their spacesuits and helmets, representing two brother socialist countries, cosmic brothers. The symbolism mingles with reality.
Kosmičtí bratři. Symbolika tu prolíná ve skutečnost.
Soyuz 28 linked up successfully with the Salyut 6 space station, and Remek and Gubarev remained in orbit for nearly 8 days, joining the two cosmonauts already at the station. Remek addressed the people of Czechoslovakia in Czech. He began by thanking the Central Committee of the Soviet Communist Party, the Politburo, and Comrade Brezhnev, and then went on to talk of the symbolism in the fact that the flight coincided with the 30th anniversary of the communist takeover in Czechoslovakia. It was back then, in those victorious days of February 1948, that our flight into the cosmos really began. And now here I am, in space, with my friends. And Remek ended by greeting his compatriots back in Czechoslovakia with the final words, "See you back on Earth." The two-man crew of Soyuz 28 returned to Earth safely at 13:44 Universal Time on March 10, 1978. The exhausted Vladimír Remek had just a few very brief words for the Czech and Slovak radio and TV crews. I'm glad we got it over with. The landing was quite smooth. I'm glad to be back. Thank you. Over 30 years later, Vladimír Remek now represents the Communist Party in the European Parliament, retaining the political beliefs of his young days as the first and last Czechoslovak cosmonaut.
That edition of From the Archives by David Warren brings us to the end of today's show. I'm Jan Richter. From all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.